Don't look now, 'cause your 15 minutes are running out. See that good time is heading to lose it. Don't look now, fire's out.
Welcome to Don't Look Now, the podcast with your hosts, Jenny McDonald and Will Hageman, coming to you today on Tuesday, as every Tuesday, with our glorious podcast full of random topics generated by Jenny, completely unknown by me, ranging anywhere from Victorian murder cults to coffee to cats to whatever the case may be. I have no idea which of these things we're going to be talking about today. So, as always, you got to ask Jenny to give me some hints here to see if this is something I do know anything about, or whether I'm just going to be nodding my head and going, yeah, cool. So what's the deal?
You're going to know. But I'm going to read you this quote because I think it perfectly encapsulates the story.
All right.
The people devoted themselves to all kind of debauchery, allowed their women folk to spend whole nights at wild parties, and mixed with trashy people and drank the most delicious wines.
Nice hedonism. Where was the hedonism? Let's see. I don't know.
There's a lot of options.
I know.
We've done
people
a part
have had
one,
fun
though.
All over the place for, for thousands of years. This isn't insane debauchery. This is just people having a good time debauchery. So I don't know. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you. This is the part two to the part one.
Oh. Got it. So the Crusades, people running into licentious people that allowed their women to drink. All right.
Mm-hmm.
In the Holy Land. All right.
Yeah, so we left off at the end of the First Crusade, and then, like, generationally, people still didn't really have anything to do with these young males, so they had to continue to, like, warfare.
Gotta get your next round ready. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and then also, like, you are the child of someone who was a crusader, so, like, that's your job now, because, you know, a lot of people view jobs as, like, lineage trails.
Yep.
So, the Second Crusade comes around. Most of the soldiers were descendants of those from the First Crusade, probably before they went on the
Before they didn't come back, but, yeah.
Right, before they found their home. And in the first few decades following the First Crusade, we did not integrate into Middle Eastern society at all. So Muslims do not drink. They were quite horrible to the people in the lands that they were living in. They thought that they were imperious. They thought they were condescending, and ended up being pretty cruel and abusive to the locals. There were a handful that were not as such. But yeah, that's where this beautiful quote about people being mixed with trashy and drinking the most delicious wine.
Yeah.
Sounds almost like what are those backhanded compliments or clapbacks for Thanksgiving? Like,
yeah.
Hedonist, but you have good wine.
Yeah. Good times, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. But unfortunately, these kinds of good times don't last forever, because eventually people dislike this and the Crusader states start to fall back into Muslim hands.
Mm-hmm.
So this reignites Crusade fever in Europe, and leads for a call to have another follow-up crusade to resecure the Holy Lands in the name of Christ. You know, that seems great. Like, wonderful plan. And the most holy person at that period of time is Saint Bernard of Clairvaux.
Oh, yes.
And he's like, yeah, absolutely, we should do this. And the leading figures of Europe are like, oh, Saint Bernard says we should do this, let's do this. And he was like, first and foremost, let's protect the homeland. We're not going to massacre the Jews. They finally catch a break, apparently. And let's make sure that we, like, get going on the right path to start.
Yeah.
This does not end well.
Nope.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I've been through some of this. Does this one involve Barbarossa, or is this not yet his time? I can't remember
Not yet his time. Yeah.
Which of the various crusades was Barbarossa, but
You know, this is just kind of a failed crusade because the Byzantines and the Turks were ready for them,
okay.
and they plotted together. Which, you know, that's, you have an ally, and it's going to be way easier to take them out. And they decide they're just going to exterminate the invaders, which they called Franks. So they're totally betrayed, and they're almost completely obliterated as they try to pass through Asia Minor. A little bit of the expedition makes it to the Holy Land, just end up fighting with people. And they're like, this is not fun.
Yeah.
And Saint Bernard is like, this is a bad plan. We did not like this. So the Europeans were just like, ah, cool. We are not going to crusade. This generation is done. So the second Crusadians called it. We're not going to send more of our people just to be obliterated, right?
Yeah.
So the third crusade comes about. And it's another power turnover in the Middle East. So in Egypt, there's a new Muslim leader named Saladin, and he recaptures Syria and a lot of the Holy Lands, including Jerusalem. And he has such a forceful assault that most of the Crusader states are left to be basically the port and a couple of castles.
Mm-hmm.
We're not fucking around. And then along comes who? Richard the First. The Lionheart.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah. So Jerusalem's no longer in Christian hands, and there's a reprisal, a call for, if you will, in Europe for another crusade. But it needed to be well organized and well equipped. And who is better to do this than the kings of Germany, France, and England? So this is where you get Barbarossa, King Philip, and Richard the Lionheart.
Okay.
And they all decide to be, once again, when you have allies and you have force and you have training and you're well equipped and you're not just sending like these servants from the field that are starving to death, turns out it makes a difference. And so they join forces in the name of God to avenge the affront to Christendom. What do you think about this, Will?
These things always end well. Yeah.
Yeah. This did not go well, so
spoiler, it didn't go well.
Right. Yeah, the Crusades kind of are a mess, honestly. So Barbarossa dies while trying to cross a river, either because of a heart attack or because he fell off his horse because his armor was so heavy he couldn't get back to the surface. So, like, lesson learned. Maybe don't wear such heavy armor. Also, it's probably going to save your life, but like, there's issues, right? So his troops don't have a leader now, and they're like, well, we're not going to go with these two guys just because he liked them, because he's dead. He's not in charge anymore. So they just turned around. Can you imagine? Like, you're just tootling along, you get to a river, your guy dies, and you're like, oh no.
No, no. Holy Roman Empire out. See you guys. Yeah.
I guess he's dead. Let's go home. Bye, guys. See you later. Nice to meet you. So then you have Philip and Richard left. And they did not like each other. They had a bit of a tiff. So Philip and him get into a little bit of a bitch fit, and Philip decides to go back to France. So Richard's now left alone. Not really enough of an army to retake Jerusalem, but that didn't stop him. He said, let's do this anyway. So he reaches the Middle East, where he meets Saladin, and after a little bit of jousting and medieval nonsense, they manage to forge an agreement to let the Christians visit the Holy Land without being hassled.
What? What?
What? But so this is not what anybody in Europe wants, right? They're like, no, the whole point is to obliterate the Muslims, not to make friends with them.
We didn't come here just to be tourists.
We didn't come here to mess around. We came here to take over. So immediately the Europeans are like, Richard the Lionheart, what the hell are you doing? Which is really funny because, like, Richard the Lionheart, you know, we have all these memories of him from more like the Robin Hood era.
Yep.
where they talk about him like he's this really just compassionate, crazy leader who's
Yeah.
just God-bound. Like, this is funny. He's just kind of not liked very well. And Barbarossa, the Germans, his son had been kidnapped, imprisoned, and was being held for, ransom, as one does. And it's a king's ransom. So to, get him out, this £100,000, which is a lot of money, bankrupts England and leaves Richard's brother, John, who's the successor, in huge debt. So the Crusades are like shot again. They're like, we're not going to spend our money this way, guys. Come home.
Yep, but hey, you get Magna Carta out of it basically, so that's good, I guess.
Exactly, because we got to find a way to make back all of our money. So now we're on to the Fourth Crusade. And we realize at this point that our plans have not gone according to plan. So we're probably going to have to restructure and come up with a better way to make things happen. The Third Crusade, huge disappointment, huge loss of funds. We haven't gotten any control back of the Holy Lands. There's a lot of fighting within England, and it's starting to run kind of counter to the Truce of God point. That was how they got people to go on the damn Crusades. And we still haven't really gotten rid of any of this aggression from the men folk at the time. That was kind of like part of the plan,
It's
right?
almost like it's bottomless, huh?
Yeah, it's wild. If anything, you've gotten more aggressive. So the Third Crusade, you would expect after it being an abysmal failure, they would just give up. No, the Fourth Crusade starts not that long after. So we've got some other changes happening in Europe at the time. Beginning of the 3rd century, we have a really strong advocate as Pope Innocent III, probably the most effective pope in medieval history, at least. He'd been trained in the law, so he knew a lot of international diplomacy better than some of the rulers in Europe who kind of just inherited the throne, and was considered to be one of the best statesmen. His ability to craft strategies promoting the interests of the church and put them into effect, pretty unparalleled at the time. So he had this kind of professional appearance that he lended to the Crusades. And it really did not help.
Almost like
Really
Pope
just
trying to act
going.
as general didn't really do much.
It didn't. Honestly, they did their best when they just let the serfs go run crazy and be a little kamikaze in nature.
Just unleash the hordes as
Truly, they had better luck when they had untrained, half-starved, very aggressive young men just run free, mostly because they didn't know any better, sadly. But you have Innocent III. He's spearheading this venture. Something's going to succeed. Maybe not the thing you think it's going to be. So he starts doing homework. He starts learning about the previous Crusades. And the thing that he noted is that in the prior Crusade, had the three leaders not fallen to shit, the one poor guy died, and then the other two just couldn't hold their shit together. Maybe they would have done better. So instead of having three people who are all by, standards, the leaders of their own respective country, all of them think they're the boss. All of them think they're, divine in nature. Let's just have one person in charge. And why shouldn't it be me? It should be me, Pope Innocent. You're right. So he's like, I'll take that mantle. I will be the leader of this crusade. And we know that in the Second Crusade, the double-dealing Byzantines and Turks who had got together and just destroyed us, that is a problem. So instead of going over land, we will go by sea. That way we can avoid that, Asia Minor section, and we won't have a problem. So we end up in downtown Constantinople, which I realize it's not Constantinople anymore, right? It's
Good old Istanbul.
Istanbul. Thank you. because that's a whole song
Yeah,
that Will
if
likes.
you're a They Might Be Giants fan, it's a
Yeah, it's like I cannot
definite
remember
song.
that song. I love it. So they end up there, and things don't go as planned. If it had gone as planned, it would have been fine. Things went bad, so we arranged contract ships and supplies from Venice, and it looks like it's going to be smooth sailing on paper, at least. But problems start to develop almost immediately because everybody thought someone else was paying for the rental of the ships. In this comedy of errors, nobody stepped up to the plate to bankroll the situation. So the Crusaders get to Venice. They're all like greeted. Well, welcome. Welcome to your chartered ship. Great. Before you get on board, if you could just pay the ship fee. Excuse me, what? It's not paid for? Oh, so no one paid for it. And things about fell through. But at this point, what are they going to do? They're already here. So they decide that they will earn their passage across the sea. So here we go. Zara, which is one of Venice's subject states on the eastern shore of the Adriatic Sea, recently revolted from the city's maritime empire. So to avoid the Venetians, the people of Zara delivered their city to the Pope's warm welcoming embrace. So now Zara is considered a papal state, which is owned and managed by the Roman Church. Smart. So in exchange for cash on delivery, the Venetians contracted with the Crusaders to stop in Zara on their way out east and then force it back under Venetian control. Right? It seems like
No
this
problem.
plan could not go better. So you're going for the Pope. This state has recently put themselves under the Pope authority, but I am the merchant sailor who owns this ship, and I want this city back under control. So I will take all of these crusaders for the Pope, take them to the city to take back the city from the Pope on the way. Great life choice.
Well thought out.
And Pope Innocent's like, that's not part of the plan. That's not part of the plan at all. So when he learns about this agreement with the Venetians, he's like, no. So he says, thank you to the crusaders that showed up. You're no longer a crusader under me. And also, all the money I was going to give you, gone. This doesn't stop them. They're already on the ship. They already have the bloodlust. We've got a plan. So he decides he's going to excommunicate all of them. So he sends all their souls to perdition. They don't care. They already figured they're going to hell, so why not, right? So they go to Zara and they deliver it back to the Venetian hands. While in the area, they came across a Byzantine exile, someone who'd been exiled from Byzantium, who offered them a substantial sum if they could make him an empire, emperor, emperor. And they were like, huh. Oh, I don't see a problem with causing a little bit of drama in Byzantium after they screwed us over in the Second Empire. Crusade, Second Crusade. So they said, okay. So they wandered off and headed towards Constantinople. There, the Crusaders' approach inspired a lot of panic among the Byzantines. Not an unreasonable reaction because now they're well-funded. It's a seaborne assault, and they just rain hell. The reigning emperor at the time and a lot of other people flee the city, so they don't really have any real resistance. They enter the capital and set their Latin nominee for emperor on the throne, then turn around and head for the Holy Land. So far, not really a crusade, more of hitmen for hire.
Little mercenary action.
A little mercenary cruise going on here. They just kind of wander around, and now they decide it's time for us to become true crusaders and Muslim killers because, they weren't killing people already. Like, I don't know. So they hardly leave the harbor at Constantinople when the Latin pretender is murdered. So they're like, daggummit. The news of the assassination reaches them, and they're like, turn around, turn around. Let's get our supply lines fortified. So now they come back, and all the earlier treacheries are haunting the Byzantines. The Crusaders find the city bolted tight against them. The stage is set for siege. The odds are strongly in the Byzantines' favor. And ever since its founding by the Roman Emperor Constantine in the 4th century, they had never really succumbed to an assault from the outside. Yeah. So they lay siege on Constantinople. So they were determined to fight anyone but the Muslims at this point. As long as the heavens failed, Byzantium and its capital city fall siege for the first time ever. And it's not against the Muslims or the Vikings or the Mongols and all the people that had tried to take it before. However, it's their closest relatives, the Europeans, and they just tear it down. And so they decide they're going to turn it into New Rome. Takes 3 days, which I think is wild when you think of all the other people that have laid siege on this area.
Yeah.
So for one, the library there is destroyed when the Crusaders ransack it. They stable their horses inside the library. Thanks. We know that there's a lot of learning and literature lost at this time. Some of the complete works of ancient writers that we don't have anything on anymore. I think this is such an interesting take that a lot of historians talk about is like, oh, we lost all this great literature and history and knowledge of the ancients. If you don't know that you ever had it, you didn't lose it.
Nice.
I mean, I truly feel like there are certain levels of work that we will always hear about, even if everything's destroyed. Like, why is Plato still being talked about? Because someone remembered, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I think history has kind of a weird view on some of this, but that's just me. I also am sad, though, about the loss that I don't know existed. And then there's a fire that kind of gets started. So in 1453, the Turks decide they want to come in and lay siege to the city and take it once and for all and totally exterminate Byzantium. This was, of course, because the Christian crusaders were able to do this so easily that now everyone else is going to try to do it. So Constantinople, now part of Istanbul, part of the Islamic world. So in besieging the cities that are not the Muslim cities at the time, the men of the Fourth Crusade were like, we actually did so much work. This is something that I love. They're like, oh, you know, we took over Zara and then we took over Byzantium. I don't think we need to go to the Holy Land. Like, we did our job. So they're like,
we toppled a Christian state. Go.
Right. It's fine. We took out our like closest allies.
They were different Christians, so we don't care about that.
Yeah, we have obviously done exactly what we were supposed to do.
Yeah.
So they feel no need to continue on to the Holy Lands. They return to Europe with their spoils because I'm sure they stole a bunch of shit.
Mm-hmm.
And they were super proud that they had briefly reunited the East and the West. And, you know, this is great. And Pope Innocent is like, yeah, good job. You did big things. So he recommunicates all these crusaders that he had excommunicated previously. And then they bring them in and they parade them in triumph, showing all the plunder of the East, all the gold and all the shit that they stole. And it was as if like they were all wearing a shirt that was like, my uncle sacked Constantinople. I got this big bronze horse. We did good things. We didn't. Because we can't leave things good enough alone, we have to have one more crusade, the last crusade, if you will. So this is more of a problem because the Fourth Crusade had also depleted a lot of material resources and manpower. You know, a lot of people die, shockingly, when they join the Crusades. We do think the Siege of Constantinople reinvigorated a lot of the interest in religious warfare, though, in the East. So, I don't know. Pope Innocent III is like, I have an idea. This time, let's actually make it to the Holy Land. So this is called the Albigensian Crusade, and it takes a while. It's not really directed against the Muslim East, but more at land. So it's a dramatic shift in something that's been dubbed a crusade, because previously, like, the whole propaganda behind it has been to get rid of Muslims. So this claim, or aim, is to rid southern France of Albigensians, which is a heretical sect that refused to give authority to the church. They're a shade of Gnostics. So it's more of a papal war than a crusade, and especially because it promotes fighting in-house. But, you know, I think no one really ever saw these as fights for God, if I'm honest.
Yeah, I think it's weird as certain individuals did.
Right. Right.
But no one leading did. It's like your random crazy guy out there thought so, but
Right.
everybody else was just out for their own glory. And, you know, yeah, it's a mess. All right. Yeah.
Well, and I think too, once you start to see historically, you've got these people that did go to the Crusades that were in poverty when they left, and then they ransack and they come back with material wealth.
Yep.
And this is a way out of poverty for a lot of people. So they did see it as something glorious to behold.
Yeah, and this was also, I mean, everything would have been attributed to God's favor. So, you know, you were
Right.
being blessed by having done these things.
Exactly. So, these are really military missions, like I said, at this point. We know they're not really fighting for God. They are, because it's the church's army at this point.
Yeah.
We're
They are,
warned
because they're
specifically.
getting indulgences by doing that.
Right. So, they're going to earn a place in heaven by not only fighting infidels, but also by fighting their neighbors, which is pretty attractive to a lot of these young men at this point, because they're like, oh, I don't have to go to these hostile barren lands. I don't have to go to these places that my grandpa talked about. It's just here in Europe. It's only like a day trip away. So if I get bored, I can come home, which I think is how people from my age would like view this project. Like, huh, I don't know, I might get homesick. Right. And it's pretty difficult to get a foreign war to happen. We don't have any army come near the Holy City since Richard was there. So trying to head east seems like a boring thing to do. Yeah, it's just not a thing. This is not really also considered a fifth crusade, which is why they call it the last crusade. Like, since it's not going east, it's here. So what no crusade since the second had achieved is the mass exportation of our aggressive male subspecies, if you will. We can't get those big groups of these young men to leave like they did in the second crusade. The fifth crusade does, though. They did their best at killing as many European-born hot-headed males as possible. They totally burned off some of that pent-up hostility that they had. It just was rough. They sure did kill off a lot of young men during this period of time. So they're sent by sea to Egypt. They land on the shores of the Nile just in time for the floods. So a lot of them drown. With this consequence, you know, they had embraced the West ever since. So it's just a mess. And then the next European expedition to the East doesn't go well either. It's Frederick II's crusade. And it's because the leader was the Holy Roman Emperor, Frederick II. It's neither called for nor sanctioned by the Pope. So it's just kind of an attempt to have good relations with the Middle East. He gets to Jerusalem. He gets it back in Christian control. But the Pope won't acknowledge it as a crusade. So that's a problem. Innocent III had died by this point in time. So even though we had been able to get there and reclaim Jerusalem, the problem was that Frederick had done it through diplomacy and not through war, which does not qualify it as a crusade.
Yeah. Went through all this with the whole history of the Germans. Yeah, because he'd been excommunicated by the Pope because he had not gone on crusade and was like, okay, well, I'll go get the Holy Lands back. So he left and he got the Holy Lands back, and they're like,
It's
No,
like
that's not
everybody
what we
happy
actually
with
wanted
me.
you to do. We wanted you to go off and die. That's not the point here, so.
Right. We're trying to kill people. We're not trying to make, I mean, I think that's the thing that's overwhelmingly apparent with all the crusades, that they really were looking for shit for these like aggressive men to do.
Yeah, so he's allowed to take Jerusalem. Jerusalem's now, like, quote unquote, under Christian hands, and the Pope's so pissed that he puts the city under interdict so nobody in Jerusalem can have communion as long as Frederick the Second is around. So he has to, like, leave so people are allowed to, like, absolve their sins. And yeah, it's a
And what happens
total.
as soon as he leaves? The Muslims come back and take Jerusalem.
It's just so much petty crap. It's just amazing. So yeah.
Right. So the last of the military expeditions are the Sixth and Seventh Crusades. Each is led by Louis the Ninth of France. Total failures. Louis dies leading the Seventh Crusade and doesn't come anywhere near the Holy Lands. What it did, though, was ensure the king's journey into canonization, I guess.
Yeah, so now you got St. Louis. But
Exactly. So it's 1291, the last Christian outpost in the Middle East. The port city of Acre falls to Muslim forces, and the Crusades are done. As a sign of this, during the Centennial Jubilee of 1300, a celebration of Christianity's might and longevity, Pope Boniface the Eighth, offers indulgence to the Christian pilgrims if they would crusade to Rome and not Jerusalem. Don't think that it means crusade in the same way that they thought it meant crusade. So the Crusades end. There's no point anymore in fighting for the Holy Lands. All it's doing is killing people, and honestly, they're all too broke, and they've killed off another of the young men that it's difficult. This doesn't mean that war ends, obviously, because like the Hundred Year War comes almost immediately after, and then Black Death. So like it's just a really dark period of time in the medieval period in general. Anyhow, that's the end of the Crusades. So let's go down some real wild rabbit holes and talk about weird shit that was going on at this time. Eels, which I think are in much bigger supply in Europe than they are in the United States.
Yeah, they're a whole thing, which just always seems weird to me. I don't just run into eels all over the place around here. But
Right. I remember watching the movie Princess Bride. Remember there's the whole scene with the eels,
yep.
that they the screaming eels or whatever. And I remember thinking, where the hell are they getting all these eels? And then like occasionally I'll see some cooking travel thing where they're talking about the ease of getting eels. And I'm like, where the fuck is everybody getting eels?
Yeah,
Is
it's
this
like
more common? I would be afraid to swim in your waters.
never seen a wild eel in my life. I've only seen them in aquariums, but yeah.
Right. So apparently they're so common that they're were sometimes used as currency in the medieval period of time. Someone once rented land for 26,275 eels.
Nice.
I do not know how long that land was rented for, but
I can't remember which English king it is, but I remember after our trip to the UK, we got our little, history of the royal family book that the kids enjoyed going through, and one of them died from eating too many eels. I can't remember.
I don't know that eels, like, I'll eat an eel. I'll try one. I'm in. I don't know that I would want to test how many I should be eating, though.
I think
Kind of
the
like most
official
fish,
the
right?
official cause of death was like the surfeit of lampreys. I was like, what? It's like,
Interesting. So we do know one other thing about the Middle Ages. Shoes were insane. So shoes follow fashion, always have. They always have just a little quirk to them. And long-toed shoes were a sign of fashion. So that's why you'll see a lot of like long curly-toed shoes in medieval drawings. So from about the 1330s onward, people began wearing these ridiculously long-toed shoes. The longer they were, the better. They originated in Krakow, Poland, so they were called Krakow shoes.
Nice.
I agree.
The whole Ron DeSantis thing now.
What? Ron DeSantis wears Krakow shoes?
Just about to try to appear taller, he has giant lifts in his boots, but to
Oh.
then make it look less like he has giant lifts in his shoes, he has like the toes are about 6 inches too long so that he doesn't look like he's standing at an angle in his shoes. So he has these giant floppy toed boots that just are hilarious.
How do you not fall? Like,
I don't know. I think that's why everybody walks so damn weird.
interesting.
Yes,
All right.
that's our level of political discourse now is wearing
Shoes.
weird lifty shoes to try to try to look like you know what you're talking about or something. I
I don't know. Did you know that during the medieval times that you could try an animal and convict them for a crime and they could be sentenced to death?
Yes, I remember some stories about that.
France seemed especially like against animals at various points in time. So I know in France in 1457, there was a female pig that was charged with murder, found guilty, and hanged. Now, bear with me, this is going to be morbid. Would you eat the pig then? Like, it
Don't
feels like
know.
such a waste, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Especially during the 1450s when. Okay.
It would have
I
been
don't know, it
useful.
just really bothers me. At various points in time, soccer slash football for the Europeans was banned in England. So April 13, 1314, King Edward II bans football in London, and the reason is that it was too noisy. The great noise caused by hustling over large balls from which many evils arise, which God forbids, we command and forbid on behalf of the king. So pain of punishment would be like that's what would happen if you played football in the city
Nice.
because it was too noisy and balls were forbidden.
Fun times.
That would have been too when it was pig's bladders, probably, that they were using.
Yep. Yeah, so you're banning balls, banning like plays, all kinds of fun stuff going on back then.
And we wonder why we had so many males with aggression problems with no
Got
outlet.
nothing to do, man.
Yeah, they were freaking bored because they banned everything because it was considered immoral at various points in
Yeah,
time.
can't kick a ball. You just have to go off in a homicidal rage with a sword. It's a
So between the 12th and 14th centuries, the population of London went up 500%. So at the start of the 14th century, they'd gone from 17,000 people to 100,000 people,
lot.
which is why later things are so devastating. Outside of London, the largest towns in England at that time were considered cathedral cities. So, in like Lincoln, Canterbury, York, and Chichester, people lived around the church because it's a great place for trade.
Makes
And
sense.
finally, if you're Cornish, you're not English.
Yeah.
Yeah. So apparently, Truro received its crown charter in 1173, and it was addressed to the barons of Cornwall, both Cornish and English. You're Cornish, you're not English.
There you go.
Kind of like the Scottish aren't considered English.
Yep.
Yeah.
Scottish aren't English. The Welsh aren't English.
Right. But a lot of people put them all in the same vein because they're in Northern Europe.
Yeah, I think for us, everybody just tends to be British and we don't really distinguish. I remember
Yes.
being a kid and I remember we had a student teacher that came from Wales and he was absolutely horrified to think everybody, find that everybody thought he was English and he's like, oh, hell no.
I don't even know that I would consider them British, though, if you're
Wales, I
Welsh.
mean, because the Welsh got subsumed more than the rest, so Wales got pulled into England officially.
Yeah.
They don't have their separate stuff like a lot of the others. Like you get, like the Scots get their own football team and
Yeah, they
the
do.
Scots and the Irish and the Northern Ireland all get little football teams, but there's no Welsh team. So I know that no, they do have a Welsh team.
I was going to say
Take
there is
that
a
back.
Welsh team,
They do. All
but
right.
it's still under probably the flag of England at
Yeah,
some
no,
point.
they basically got, I mean, they're still Welsh. There's
Yeah.
still Wales, but it's, now an English princedom. So, you got good stuff. So, I obviously misspoke, but yeah.
No,
I,
it's just real interesting because, like, even in Scotland, Holyrood Palace, the queen, that's still a queen's spot to go.
yep.
but
it
they're
was
not.
considered one of the separate kingdoms, so you're, you know.
Right. It's just fascinating how it's like, oh yeah, we still have a summer house devoted to this entire other country here.
Yep.
But yeah.
Yes, I'm always confused about how exactly the separate countries in the United Kingdom work, but yeah.
Well, I think part of that's because the UK tried to colonize the entire world. So sometimes it's a little confusing to be like, but wait, how are you related?
Yeah, but I'm always just confused. Like, I mean, going back to sports things, like with soccer, they all compete separately. There's an English team, there's a Scottish team, there's a, you know. But in the Olympics, they're Team Great Britain.
Because they're part of the British Isles.
Yes, but only Great Britain, not Ireland. So,
right.
So, yeah, so it's just Team Scotland, Wales, and England are all Team GB, but like they're not, they don't compete as the UK.
Right.
They compete as Great Britain.
And it's especially interesting because like Scotland's not part of the EU, but isn't Ireland?
Well, the Republic of Ireland is, but Northern Ireland isn't.
Right. That makes sense. Perfect. Ah,
but yeah.
Politics.
But then you get the whole thing that Northern Ireland is part of the UK, but it's not part of Great Britain because it's on the island of Ireland. So it's
right.
Weird.
It's weird, but also it makes total sense.
I mean, it's all, I mean, it makes sense, but then I don't understand the delineations of like.
Right. There's a lot of different nuances to depending on your scenario,
English,
whether or not we're friends.
You know, like, you're not a UKian. I don't know, you know, like, how do you talk about what the hell people, like, what is your nationality? Are you truly English? Are you, you're not really,
well,
people
see,
don't.
That's a problem, though, because, like, especially in Northern Scotland, sometimes they identify as from the Viking people. I lost my train of thought on what they identified with.
General Scandinavian-ish.
Yeah. Well, especially because there's a couple of areas where it's a very small distance. It's like between Russia and Alaska small.
Yeah.
And so in those areas, they're like, I mean, it's a 10-minute boat ride to see my family in Finland. So like, what are we really talking about here?
It's interesting. I mean, I guess in the UK or the US, like our states are so much a subdivision that, I mean, they obviously weren't at the outset, but now your national identity is definitely American, and you live in a general subdivision of that in a given state, as opposed to, you know, you're definitely not going to compete in the Olympics as Kansas or something. So, you know.
I think that this is why people get that are foreign view our politics is so confusing, though, because most of our states are also considered sovereign states.
Yeah. They're sovereign about certain, everything that isn't given to the federal government is given to the state, so they can negotiate their own things in various ways. It's very
right.
Weird.
Yeah.
Very strange. But then you get
very
into things
weird and
like
very strange.
Our territories can compete separately. So like there is a Puerto Rican Olympic team. But if you're Puerto Rican, you're a US citizen, but you don't compete for the US. You can actually compete as Puerto Rico. So
right. The number of people, though, that don't realize that Puerto Rico is part of the United States because it's not on, it's a territory. It's not a state.
A state. But
yeah.
Yep. So there's so many weird political things that I don't quite understand what qualifies you to do various things and compete separately or act separately or not. I don't know.
Agreed.
Whatever.
Yeah. I don't know. It
Anyway.
doesn't make sense. Anyhow.
Weird aside, but yeah, all right.
This is the result of too much colonization, I've decided.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds fair. Well, cool. That's probably a good place to wrap things up.
Yeah. Tangent done.
All right. Well, yeah. No. Well, thanks for the topic. Thanks for all the information on the Crusades. So now we've gotten through the Crusades and their insanity and general, the only thing that ever actually accomplished what they wanted was a diplomatic seizure of Jerusalem that wasn't recognized by anyone and immediately lost. And yeah, because that's not what they actually wanted.
No, we wanted to fight aggression out of boys.
Yeah. Well, cool. Well, thanks for listening this week, everybody. You know, as always, rate, review, subscribe, tell your friends, and we'll see you all in a week.
Bye.
Bye, folks.